Starting a business, you might have heard or might know, can be mighty tricky. There's a big checklist. Idea, check. Market, check. Money, check. And then there are all those intangibles, things that are not necessarily on any checklist but can make the difference between success and failure. Today's guest helps entrepreneurs make the decisions necessary to get a new business going and keep it going. Gary Einhorn moved to the Rogue Valley 25 years ago. He has built and sold a couple of businesses and now works as a consultant and coach for people working to turn their ideas into successful businesses. Gary Einhorn, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jeff.
So I see that you serve on the board of the Ashland Food Co-op and the Southern Oregon Time Co-op. You're also active with the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at Southern Oregon University and a member of the Ashland Chamber. So pretty well connected in the community. Entrepreneur for 30 years now. Did you once work for other people?
Yes, I did, and that's why I became an entrepreneur. I felt I needed to control my own destiny. But I did work. My first career was that of a knitting technologist, and I had moved to Germany in 1968. I lived in Germany for a year, and I worked and apprenticed in two knitting factories, and then moved to England in 1969 and got a degree in knitting technology at the University of Leicester in England, in the Midlands of England. And then my goal was to work in London, beginning with Marks and Spencer for a couple of years, and then emigrate to New Zealand, because this was during the Vietnam War crisis, and my intention was to eventually emigrate to New Zealand. But I had another year remaining in my Army duty, so I came back to the States to finish that up. And shortly before intending to move back to London, I met someone and fell in love and got married.
Ah.
That was the end of my dream of returning to England.
Once again, life is what happens to you when you're busy making other plans.
That's right.
So let me understand, you actually served in the Army in the Vietnam era?
I was in the Army Reserves for 6 years and finished that in 1969. Finished that obligation, yes. Mm-hmm.
Did you actually spend any time in Vietnam?
I never spent any time in Vietnam. I spent most of the time actually in Europe.
All right. It sounds like you were not really keen on what was going on in Vietnam and wanted nothing to do with this or the country.
Correct.
All right. So once you ended up getting married and doing what you were doing, so your career changed from there. Were you still working for other people?
Well, I started working for Monsanto Company, but Monsanto Company in 19
not something you say out loud.
Not something I want to talk about very much. But in 1972, Monsanto was not the same company it is today, and I was in the textiles division. And I worked as a fabric development and technical service representative for 3 years. And then I left Monsanto and became quality control manager for a large knitted fabric producer in New York City. And then, Jeff, I had a midlife crisis. And I decided I no longer wanted the corporate world. And so I left the corporate world and actually trained to become a tennis teaching professional, which I did for 4 or 5 years. But at that time, that's when I started my second business, which was hot pretzel and Italian ice stands, mm-hmm. of which my partner and I had 5 of them in the New York City area. And they were very successful and made a lot of money. But after a couple of years, we lost our lease. They were in front of a large store, much like Fred Meyer is here. And that store went out of business, and we lost our lease, and that was the end of that business.
Interesting connection then. So your success was dependent upon the place where you were allowed to keep your cards. Was that E.J. Corvettes or Times Square Stores?
It was actually E.J. Corvettes.
You mentioned you were from the greater New York area. Yeah.
It was exactly E.J. Corvette. Mm-hmm. That's where the 5 stands were, in front of E.J. Corvette stores. And I must also say that prior to that, after I left Monsanto, I did join 2 brothers in a knitted fabric business, and I was in that business with them for about 3 or 4 years. And then they didn't get along, and they split up, and it was not too long after that that I did the tennis teaching.
All right, so the fabric stuff long behind you now? Haven't done anything with it in quite a while?
No, not in a long, long time.
And yet you started a Rogue Valley business along about 1988 or so. Is that when you moved here?
Yes, I moved here in 1988. But in 1985, I started from scratch a business in Nyack, New York, which was the distribution of organic and natural foods. Because I grew up basically from the age of early 30s to perhaps 60 or so, total vegetarian, macrobiotic, vegan, and then vegetarian. And then so in 1985, I started this business, and it was very successful. But I came out in 1988 for a visit and just fell in love with Ashland and decided to move. And so I sold that business in 1988 and moved here and started Beardsley's Natural Foods, which was the same business in New York, totally from scratch, not knowing anybody and just from the very, very beginning.
Okay, we'll talk about what Beardsley's turned into for you and what you're able to do with it down the road and what it's doing now and how you're coaching and consulting people who are trying to get their own businesses off the ground. Gary Einhorn, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Your comments and questions, welcome. We'll come back and talk more with Gary and you in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange and Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Gary Einhorn, who has started and run successful businesses several times over and now works on coaching and consulting other people to do the same out of his home in Ashland. You can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about what it takes to get a business off the ground. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, email address jx@jeffnet.org. So you talked about starting Beardsley's Natural Foods in Ashland about 1988 or so, which essentially was the recreation of your Nyack, New York-based natural food business, but just a Rogue Valley version of it. Did you actually make food? I mean, how did it work?
No, I did not produce anything. When I came here for a week in 1988, I went to visit a number of the local food producers. At that time, there was Pyramid Juice, Pastabilities Pasta, Rising Sun Farm, and several others. And I went to them and I asked them if they felt that they needed someone to market and physically deliver all of their products, because it wasn't cost effective for them to deliver a few of their products to Jacksonville, let's say, or Grants Pass or whatever. And if I took a basket of these products, it would be worthwhile for me to do it, and they would receive the representation that they needed. And it would also afford them, if they didn't have to focus on the local market, they could focus on expanding their business outside of the Rogue Valley, which is what happened with certainly with Rising Sun Farm after I became their distributor in 1989, and to some extent Pyramid Juice as well.
So what you were giving them was some kind of marketing and distribution arm that they really couldn't afford to keep themselves?
Yes, and actually, not the case with Rising Sun Farm so much, but with some of the others, they weren't proficient in marketing and distribution. They certainly could produce, and they knew how to do that. But my strong suit is marketing and distribution, and that's what I focused on.
So, but there are some challenges, obviously, in food-based businesses that don't exist in your field of strength, which is textiles. Textiles don't go bad on the shelf. I mean,
exactly.
They might go out of style. Food does.
Yes, it does. It does. But I had lots of refrigeration equipment. I had lots of freezers. I knew how to do this because I had the template from living in Nyack, New York. I also had the template. In 1972, I and a few of my buddies started the same year that the Ashland Food Co-op began, started the Hudson River Provisions, which was a food cooperative. It was actually started as a buying club. And I was the president and also the food purchaser because nobody else knew anything about organic and natural foods at that time. So I had the templates in place before coming to the Rogue Valley in 1988.
I want to come back just a little bit because you mentioned you had worked for other people. You got your education in textiles, in knitting in particular, knitting technologist you mentioned.
Yes.
But it sounds like your entrepreneurial spirit dates back to pretty early in your life.
It does. I began – actually, my father and his brothers were first or second to have supermarkets in New York City. And my dad would take me along with him to the stores. He was the man who would go around to the stores and check on everything, which is what I wound up doing in my own business, checking all the time like this.
Managing
little
by
detective.
Walking around?
Yes, exactly. Little hands-on detective. And so, let's see. So at the age of 14, that was my first business with one of my high school buddies, and we cleared people's driveways and sidewalks of snow. And in the summertime, we watered their gardens and plants and such. And that was the beginning of my entrepreneurial career. But it actually, in a sense, began before that, Jeffrey, because I tagged around with my dad for quite a number of years.
What was the grocery store chain?
It was called Einhorn's Incorporated. And it operated in Brooklyn and Queens.
Some of the lessons that you might have learned from your own entrepreneurship in youth, from age 14, doing the walk shoveling and the lawn watering, were there things that you learned from that process, from being the boss of yourself and your friends, that still carry through into what you do today?
Yes, well, particularly what I learned from my father is how to treat people. He was extremely ethical and very empathetic and compassionate. And my father, it was interesting to watch my father because my father's first contact with people was not about business or selling them something. It was more about, how are you doing today? Or how is your son? I remember he was in the hospital. He would always begin interactions talking about personal things and genuinely was interested. And then the business part came afterwards. So he was establishing a connection. And that is so important because one of the things that I share with my clients is to focus primarily on the personal connection and, in a sense, the business secondarily. Not that the business isn't important. That's not the point here. The point is to establish a connection because people do business with people that they like and feel comfortable with and trust.
I noticed a couple of those in you have a little YouTube video we had a chance to look at.
Oh, yes.
Which explains some of the basic approaches that you take. But marketing yourself first,
yes,
is one of the key things you talk about, which is not about marketing the business, but letting people get to know you.
Totally, Jeff. Yes. It's critical to establish a trust and a connection with people. And I believe that a great deal of my success has been due to the focus on developing connections and certainly networking.
Well, yeah, and the other thing you talk about is developing relationships with vendors and customers.
Yes.
So what are some of the steps to developing those? I mean, you want to be sincere. I mean, it sounds like your father had a sincere interest in people.
He did.
This is not the kind of thing that you can probably get away with faking for very long.
It's like, no, you cannot.
Yeah, that guy asked me what I was doing, and then when I told him, he walked away.
Right. No, it has to be genuine. It has to come from the heart. And people will pick this up. I mean, people pick up, whether they realize it or not, they pick up energy. They pick up they know if it's genuine or not. No, this is not something one can manufacture. This has to come from the heart. And I think it's really important to pay attention to that.
Particularly with vendors, though. I mean, no matter how good a relationship you develop, this is a relationship that could have to go through some strain here. There's the potential for it anyway because, you know, you want it now. They want it paid for now. You're saying, well, I can pay you a week from Tuesday or something. So I mean, how do you maintain those relationships in the midst of having to deal with the business end of things as well?
I'm glad you brought this up, Jeff, because at one point in time, I thought that I needed to have contracts with the producers. So I went to one of my producers. It happened to be a Rising Moon, who was a producer of raviolis and pasta sauces.
Rising Moon, not Rising Sun?
Right. It was right. Rising Moon. Yeah. I distributed for Rising Sun and Rising Moon. Yeah. And I asked him what he thought about signing an agreement. And his response was, if that's what you want to do, Gary, I no longer want to do business with you. Because you can do contracts, but A, they have to be enforceable. And B, a contract really wouldn't help me, because if he didn't want to comply with the contract, he could simply decide not to ship me product. He could do that. And so what he was saying was, what's important is to develop a trust relationship. And he did not want to go there. And I was thinking also of approaching Rising Sun Farm at the time, because I felt that in the contract, perhaps I could get some stability, or at least know that I had something in writing, some concretized agreement with my producers. But I gave up the idea, and I never had a contract with any producer. It was simply – and Rising Sun Farm, Elizabeth and Richard were very close friends of mine, Elizabeth and Richard Fugis. And they said to me, Gary, as long as you show up and do the work, there will be no change in our relationship.
So, but it's going to be different things for different people then, isn't it? I mean, some people will want to make sure that everything is concretized, as you put it, in on paper and clearly spelled out. And some people want it to be more of a handshake kind of thing.
That's true. But I never had contracts. In fact, I remember with my father, he did business with a handshake. Now, mind you, this is back, we're talking about the 1940s and 1950s. But I don't remember my father really having contracts. It was all he seemed to make deals by simply putting his hand out, shaking someone's hand, and that was it. So that was my model. He was my model for how to be in business.
Gary Einhorn is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's an Ashland entrepreneur, has started and run several businesses and then sold them off later on. He now does business consulting and coaching, and he's sharing his secrets with us about how to get businesses off the ground in the first place and how to keep them running. Join us on the Exchange with your questions and comments, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So you're... father sounds like he had the rare combination of skills where he could be very personable, but probably also had a really good mind for figures and details. And so he could back up the handshake agreements with knowing that all the stuff was getting done in the back room the correct way.
He did. But I also noticed that he made decisions intuitively and then backed it up with research. Not the other way around.
Really? So he went with his gut and then figured out that there was research that would back him up.
Exactly. And so that's the way I operate for the most part. I just have an intuitive hit about things. And am I always right? Probably not, but often enough. Because none of my businesses failed. And I for example, I remember one time with the Beardsley business in Ashland. There was a line of syrups that were made in Oregon that would flavor coffees. And I just had an intuitive hit that this would sell. And I went ahead and purchased $10,000 worth of these syrups without having anything sold. And I did it for several reasons. Number one, not only the intuitive hit that I felt it would go, but also because it then compelled me to sell. I had to go out and merchandise this product. And that's a really tricky thing for example, for many of my clients, it's about marketing oneself and presentations and exposure and presence. And many people are petrified to do this. They don't want to deal, I believe, with rejection or no. That's something one has to cope with, and I think it really is more like the Nike ad, just do it.
So it really is a matter of it sounds like if all things are equal then, I mean, you got two great products and two people selling it, the person who's actually making a personal connection and is going to end up the likable one is the one who's going to get the sale.
I believe so. Also for entrepreneurs, I'm reminded of, I listened to the speeches of Winston Churchill to his English subjects in the Second World War when Germany bombed London for 37 consecutive nights.
The Battle of Britain. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, Jeff. And he, on the radio every night, what he said to his subjects was, never, 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 never. And he just kept repeating, give up. And so tenacity and perseverance are important elements to success as an entrepreneur. Never give up and have a mindset that everything is going to work, because I believe that people can manifest anything.
And look at how it's not directly from Winston Churchill, but the keep calm and carry on signs.
That's
from
right.
The Second World War, very much in vogue right now.
Exactly. Keep calm and carry on. Yeah.
So obviously there's going to be trial and error. It sounds like you've been successful a lot, though, and made some pretty good intuitive decisions. But were there ever times where the error just like hit you totally in the head? You bought $10,000 worth of fried papaya skins and had them in the warehouse?
That never happened. Now, perhaps I was luck, but I trust my – and more so today than when I was a youngster – is I trust my intuition. But along with that, I also have a belief, and the older I get, the more concrete it is that I can manifest anything.
Gary Einhorn's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about his consulting and coaching business, helping entrepreneurs get off the ground. So that this process then of, I mean, you have to develop intuition if you don't have it already. It sounds like you had it from a pretty young age. If you got somebody who has a good idea, they've got a clear, good plan for it, they've got the money to back it up, they're just not necessarily sure they trust themselves or their intuition. I mean, how do you work with that kind of person?
This is challenging, Jeff.
It was meant to be.
Yes. What I do is I speak from my own experience. I will speak to the client from my own experience. And how I have trusted my intuition and belief system, and give them examples from my own experience, and hopefully that will give them the confidence and the impetus to just do it and try it. Because sometimes, and more often than not, the only way to know about something is to do it. And one has to really set themselves on fire. They have to somehow just get the will or the confidence from somewhere. But again, in response to your question, I speak a lot from my own experience when I'm doing the business coaching and consulting.
It sounds like it helps if you're finding a comfort level with the people you're dealing with, though. So you might actually make some pretty clear choices in who's going to be on the other end of the transactions based on the kinds of relationships you feel like you can develop.
Totally.
Upon first meeting. So you won't necessarily work with the place that's, no, we don't need your stuff. I mean, if they say no, take it as that. But, you know, obviously if you feel like you can make an impression on them later on, you keep working them, right?
Yes, yes. And it's in a way the same way with coaching. One of the reasons I'm in private practice is I generally accept all of the people that come to me, but sometimes it will come, I'll intuitively feel that I'm not the right person for this client. And if that's the case, I will suggest to the client that they take a different path. It doesn't happen very often, but there have been several cases like that, where the chemistry just is not right, or I feel that my message will not be received and that this person needs to have someone else as their mentor or coach.
Are there people you've run across who just didn't, I mean, they weren't particularly personable? I mean, in that sort of situation, you recommend that they have a partner who is very personable and they can do the stuff in the back office or something?
Yes. Somehow they need to have that piece. And if that piece means a partner, yes. A partnership is a marriage, and it's when it works, it's great. When it doesn't work, it's not very good. It can move into the disaster zone. So I'm not very keen on partnerships, but there are times when I will suggest to my client that a partnership is in order. But in that case, it's very important for the people involved in the partnership to consider an exit strategy.
Okay, we'll break that up on the other side of a break. Gary Einhorn is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about getting businesses started. We'll come back and talk more with Gary and take your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us. Back on the Exchange in a minute five. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today to Gary Einhorn, a Rogue Valley businessman, entrepreneur, has owned a couple of businesses, sold them off. He now works as a consultant and business coach, helping new entrepreneurs get their ideas and companies and businesses formed. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange about the whole process it takes. Maybe share some stories of your own about the things that worked or didn't as you were trying to get a business started. Join us at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So from what you were just saying about partnerships and some of the inherent difficulties, you do tend to work with sole proprietors then?
Yes, primarily. But there are some partnerships that I coach and counsel. And again, it's absolutely imperative. I know this may sound a bit strange, but particularly when beginning a business, is to from that moment consider an exit strategy, and particularly with partners. Because if one of the partners is unable to continue, either through passing on or becomes infirm, what happens to, if that partner is married or has children, what happens then? Do they become part of this partnership?
Let us take a call. We have Jeannie in Medford on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about getting a business started with Gary Einhorn.
Hi. First of all, I don't know where I got this idea in my head, but that if you start a business, be prepared either to lose or not make a profit for the first 2 years. I'm not sure where I got that, but it seems to make sense. I see so many businesses, especially restaurants in Cobblestone and Medford, and I would think, yeah, be prepared to not make a profit for 2 years. Does that make sense? And secondly, I worked for a research scientist who loved to tell us Old Navy stories, and about when you said you have to be genuine and really care. How's the family? And that's the kind of guy he was. But he said, but when you're on the ship heading for the rocks, you don't say please and thank you. And by the way, if it's not too much trouble, ride hard weather now, you big dummy. By the way, how's the family?
All right, so there's a time and a place for being chummy and a time and a place for getting the work done. Thanks for that, Jeannie. Appreciate that. So the first part of her question about 2 years no profit, is that a pretty good measure?
Yes, actually, it could be 3 years. It could be anywhere, and this is generally speaking, Jeannie, that it could be anywhere from 1 to 3 years before a profit can be seen. So one has to have adequate capitalization and also patience, because it's very unlikely, although it can happen and does happen, that in the first year a business will be successful. But yes, that's a very good question that you've asked. Be prepared for anywhere, generally speaking, from 1 to 3 years before a profit can be seen.
And about the part of the personality level of things where you can be friendly and easy to get along with and all that stuff, but there comes a time, too, when decisions have to be made and orders have to be given.
there's a phrase, perhaps an old phrase, that sometimes one needs to do what one needs to do in a given situation. However, it's important to always bear in mind, as best one can, to be compassionate and empathetic and ethical in one's dealings. And Jeffrey was sharing before, during the Second World War, is, what was that? It was,
keep calm and carry on.
That's it. Does that help, Jeannie?
All right. Thanks for that, Jeannie. Appreciate it. I get the sense that that you are a decisive person. I mean, you make pretty good, pretty quick judgments about if a product is going to work, if a person can work with you, if a person can work with a product, et cetera.
I am. I think perhaps it's in my DNA, or perhaps it's a result of living in New York City, which is, at least was for me, a time of basic survival. And being a rather sensitive kid growing up, it was even more difficult for me. I think that I'm from the school. Let me say this. I seem, and I don't mean to sound boasty here, but I seem to have the ability to quickly determine what is needed. So with a client, for example, I'm oftentimes able to see the main issue or the main suggestion or path that this client needs to address or engage. The same with food products. And I just seem to have a sense of what is going to be right and work. And yes, I am decisive. And I'm also from the school of make a decision, and if there's some difficulty with it, pick up the pieces afterwards rather than hesitate. I just believe that he who hesitates is lost. That's what I believe. And I oftentimes will just make very, very quick decisions and hope that they work out.
Does that sometimes dumbfound the people that you are business coaching with, that they're not terribly decisive with? I mean, because you can come in with a great idea, great product, whatever, but you just are not a person who really pulls the trigger easily.
Yes. I would say many of my clients have some hesitancy and some doubt, and it's important to realize that it's important to exercise some degree of caution, but hesitancy and doubt can ruin a business from being successful. Too much of that potion can be very detrimental.
Let's talk about some of the other cornerstones of your approach. We already talked about relationships with vendors and customers. Keep those good. Market yourself first. Establish a niche is a pretty obvious one. You got to have a product that nobody else is doing, at least a service that nobody else is doing. You tend to work more with people providing services?
It's pretty mixed, Jeff. I wouldn't say primarily. I think it's in terms of the niche, let me say something about that, is it's something that either needs to be different or that one does better than anybody else. Those are the two main components in terms of niche. So it's important for entrepreneurs to be thinking about that. What can I do better, or what can I do differently than anybody else? And then jump on it before somebody else comes in.
Do you find sometimes that some businesses are created as reactions to others, in the sense of like, well, you know, this guy seemed to have a great idea, but he's executing it horribly, so I thought, why don't I do it instead?
Yes, definitely. I definitely have clients with that perspective and who go into business because they feel that they can do it better than anybody else, and oftentimes it's the case.
So there is a level of, I mean, this is, again, part of being decisive. I mean, you have to get to a point where, I'm sorry, I'm going to put this guy out of business, but I do this better and I need to make a living, so off I go.
Yes. And if one can do something better, then go for it. Absolutely.
All right. So one of the other cornerstones of your approach is mentors. I mean, so people obviously need to have people like you around to rely upon. Without you, I mean, what are some of the places people go for mentors? I mean, do they turn to family members, parents, friends?
Well, they certainly can, but it's best if one is in business to find a mentor or coach or consultant that has the experience mainly, that has the experience of having been there to mentor. And I'll say that I have mentors even to this day, that people that I go to for help and support as well. It's not just the informational side, it's also the support side that is extremely important. But I want to make the point that I believe it's important to have professional help for businesses, particularly when they're first starting out, because otherwise it's a situation where you can pay me now or pay me later. And I'm reminded when I grew up in New York, there was an ad on television for Fram oil filters. And there was this vehicle that came into a gas station. The gas station attendant picked up the hood. The car blew up. And then he looked inside and he saw it was due to the oil filter, which was a very easy, inexpensive fix. It's sort of pay me now or pay me later. And sometimes when the payment is later, it's far greater. So whether it's me specifically, I strongly urge entrepreneurs to get professional help with someone who has experience.
So what would be the checklist then? I mean, if we're talking to about you know, the things you need to do if you want to get a business started, you got the idea. I assume that's number one, but I've never done this myself. So
Certainly it starts with an idea and a dream. Then one needs to do an inventory of one's personality. Can I work long hours? Because it's going to be oftentimes very long hours. For many years, I worked minimum 50 hours and more often 60 hours a week. So it needs to be something you're going to love, because you're going to spend a lot of time with this business and idea. So in birthing it, be prepared for long hours. Be prepared to persevere, have tenacity, be patient for results, because results oftentimes do not come immediately, but realize that you're building something. Something is being built. So patience is extremely important.
I have noticed that there's always the set of figures that get bandied about, and among them is the number of businesses that fail. And people usually tend to shoot this to the high end of the scale. I did check, and it was several different studies that all arrived at the same general conclusion, which was by year four, it's roughly about half.
At least, yes. Yes, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. That's not to say that should necessarily scare people. It's certainly informational, but anything is possible.
All right. So we talked about, you have the idea or dream. You have to take a personal inventory and figure out what you're willing to put up with over the course of the next couple of years as you're forming this business.
Yes.
Then do you look for money, assuming you don't have it already?
Yes. And capitalization is the bane of small entrepreneurs, because there really isn't a money available for startups. Banks may not appreciate what I'm going to say, but banks oftentimes loan to people that don't need it. So banks.
In other words, your credit's already good, so you don't need,
Yeah, or it's banks will loan to people that have the ability to pay back the loan, understandably. So they'll have collateral, which small entrepreneurs most of the time don't have. They need seed money. So how do you find seed money? There's generally three ways to do it. Is friends, family, and fools. But it's not fools. Now, friends and family are certainly ways to do it. They come with their own attachments and challenges, of course. But oftentimes, that's how small entrepreneurs start their business. Fools meaning someone who likes your idea or likes you and is willing to help you and will give you some seed money to start. And sometimes with no other reason than they wish to do good. But there really is a lack of money available anywhere from $1,000 to $5,000 for small entrepreneurs to get started. So capitalization is certainly difficult. And this is something I was planning to do if I had received a sizable inheritance from my father, but it didn't work out that way. But if it had, I was going to do as a business microloans.
And does that whole issue, though, get turned on its head? I mean, with the internet around there now and Kickstarter and all this crowdfunding stuff, it seems like you've got a lot more options.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that. Crowdfunding is definitely an option with Kickstarter and Indiegogo. And that's certainly a way that a number of entrepreneurs today can finance their businesses. And it's certainly viable. Of course, with Kickstarter, if you don't raise the amount of money that you're asking for, you don't get anything. Indiegogo is different. Whatever you raise, you get to keep, but you give up a higher percentage. Yes, crowdfunding is definitely an option for small entrepreneurs.
Okay, a lot changing in the world today, but still you need to have a good idea, some good skills with other people as well. Gary Einhorn is a business coach and consultant. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jeff. It's been a pleasure being here.
We've learned a lot. Coming up tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange at 8 o'clock, we'll talk about National Pollinators Week and who and what gets observed there. In our Vent Stay segment, we'll talk about options in Iraq and self-serve gasoline back on the docket on our Vent Stay segment. And then at 9 o'clock, we'll meet the author of the book, A People's History of the Peculiar. A lot of stories in history you might not have been aware of. That's all tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. Our producer and today's engineer, Charlotte Duran. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Please join us again tomorrow at 8 for another edition of the Jefferson Exchange here on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. And have a great day.